Osho, the Buddha, the emptiness of the heart, talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 6.
Beloved Gokwan, Rupa said, at the beginning, you have to take up a koan. The koan is some deep thing of a patriarch. Its effect in this world of distinctions is to make a man's gaze straight and to give him strength if he stands on the brink of the riverbank. For the past 2 or 3 years, I have been giving, in my interviews, 3 koans. The true faith before father and mother were born, the heart, the Buddha, and no heart, no Buddha. For one facing the turbulence of life and death, these koans clear away the sandy soil of worldly concerns and open up the golden treasure which was there from the beginning, the ageless root of all things. However, if after grappling with the koan for 3 or 5 years, there is still no satori, then the koan should be dropped. Otherwise, it may become an invisible chain round one. Even these traditional methods can become a medicine which poisons. In general, meditation has to be done with urgency, that if, after 3 or 5 years, the urgency is still maintained forcibly, the tension becomes the wrong one, and it is a serious condition. Many lose heart and give up as a result. An ancient has said, sometimes quickly, and sometimes slowly, sometimes hot on the trail, and sometimes resting at a distance. Rupa continued, so this mountain priest now makes people at this stage throw down their koan. When it is dropped and there is a cooling down, in due time they hit on what their own true nature is as the solution of the koan. In concentration on the koan, there is a time of rousing the spirit of inquiry. There is a time of breaking the clinging attachment. There is a time of furious dashing forward. And there is a time of damping the fuel and stopping the boiling. Since coming to Japan, this mountain priest has been making the pupils look into a koan. But when they have done this for a good time, he tells them to throw it down. The point is that many people come to success if they first have the experience of wrestling with a koan and later reduce the effort. But few come to success at the time when they are putting out exceptional effort. So the instruction is that those who have not yet looked into a koan absolutely must do so, that those who have had one for a good time must throw it down. At the time of Zazen, they throw it all away. They sleep when it is time to sleep, go when it is time to go, sit when it is time to sit, and so on, as if they were not doing Zen at all.
Before I discuss
what Bhikkhu is saying. I have to introduce you to the word Quran. It is something like a puzzle that cannot be solved. Basically, insoluble. For example, how you looked before you were born. There is no way to solve the problem. There is no way to find the answer. Are the Quran the most famous one? The one hand clapping. Now one hand cannot clap. For clapping, the other hand would be needed. So first you have to understand the meaning of Quran. It is some kind of statement which has no answer anywhere. And the master gives it to the disciple to meditate on it and find out the answer. From the very beginning the disciple knows and the master knows there is no possible way to find the answer. But it is a great strategy. When the mind cannot find the answer and the meditation has to be very urgent with total energy, focused on the Quran, the mind feels almost impotent. It looks here and there, brings out this answer, that answer, and gets hit from the master by bringing a wrong answer. Every answer is wrong because the very function of the Quran is not to get the answer. The very function of the Quran is to tire your mind to such a moment that it gives up. If there was an answer, the mind will find it. It does not matter whether you are very intelligent or not very intelligent. No intelligence of any category can find the answer. Then naturally, mind tries and tries and comes every morning to see the master to tell him what he has found in the 24 hours. In the beginning, the disciples think perhaps they may be able to make it out. A disciple was given the Quran one hand clapping. He heard the sound of the wind passing through the pine tree and he thought, perhaps this is the sound of one hand clapping. He rushed to give the answer to the master, but before he could even open his mouth, he was beaten. He said, "This is too much. I have not said anything." The master said, "It does not matter whether you have said or not. You were going to say." The student said, "But at least you should have heard." The master said, "It does not matter. Whatever you say is going to be wrong. Just go and meditate." When disciples become accustomed, they don't rush to the master with answers, they know there is no answer. Knowing that there is no answer, mind gives up. And the whole strategy is very subtle. To put the mind aside, tired, exhausted, it has no desire to function anymore. The moment you put the mind aside, you have entered into the world of meditation. It has nothing to do with the koan, but the koan helps to tire the mind. Bhukkho is a very practical master. Most of the Zen masters are not so practical. They speak from their peaks of consciousness. Bhukkho is speaking from the same ground where you are. And he is of much more help than the great masters who speak from far away. Peak of consciousness. Bhukkho knows that even if they shout, they will not be understood. It is better to come down to the dark valley and talk to people in a way that they can somehow get the point that mind is of no use in the internal journey. That is the point. That mind is a hindrance, not a help, a wall, not a bridge. And Bhukkho is very compassionate. In going into the details, no other master has gone into the details and even giving warning that the method is not 100% proof. No device can be. Even the method itself can become a hindrance. At the beginning, you have to take up a koan, says Bhukkho. The koan is some deep saying of a patriarch. Its effect in this world of distinctions is to make a man's gaze straight and to give him strength as he stands on the brink of the river bank. Your mind is a very wavering, wobbly. A koan concentrates all your energies. A koan has not to be done in a lukewarm way. That is dangerous. It has to be done with totality. So you can absorb the mind quickly as possible. The longest period the masters have experienced is 3 years. If you cannot get in 3 years tired, that means you are not putting your total energy into it. You are saving energy. You are not going really hard. If you go really hard, then in a single moment you can see it straight that there is no answer, and the very experience that there is no answer at all, mind drops down by the side. You have entered into the space of your being. But if you go on doing it so, the danger is that after 3 years, if you have not got it yet, then it is better to drop the koan. It is not going to help, it is not going to hamper and hinder. It has become just a habit, sitting silently, and just by the way, with many other thoughts coming and going, one thought is also, what is the sound of one hand clapping? But you are not totally concentrated. So that only the koan is there and nothing else. Bhukku says the koan is some deep saying of a patriarch. It, in this world of distinctions, is to make a man's gaze straight, to put his straight on a single point, to make his consciousness like an arrow. Not going in all the ways, a path here and path there, a part in the past and a part in the future, and you are doing the koan with whatever small is left, which has not gone anywhere. This way you will never come to the end. On the contrary, this will become your habit. You will do the koan your whole life, it will never bring meditation to you. So if within 3 years a koan is not dropped on itself with the mind, and you don't enter into being, into the silence of being, where there is no question and no answer, then please stop the koan. Don't let it become a habit. Don't let it become a mental condition. The first thing is to make your gaze straight and to give you strength as you stand on the brink of the river bank. For the past 2 or 3 years, I have been giving in my interviews 3 koans. The true faith before father and mother were born. Not only you, but before your father and mother were born, your true faith. There is no way to find where you were, what was your true faith. The second, the heart, the Buddha. Find out the heart which is the Buddha. And the third, no heart, no Buddha. These 3 koans he has used, there are 1001 koans. Anything which is insoluble looks beautiful, but when you start working on it, you try to find that you have come to the end of the road. It does not go anywhere. For one facing the turbulence of life and death, these koans clear away the sandy soil of worldly concerns and open up the golden treasure which was there from the very beginning, the ageless root of all things. The koan can do a miracle, although it is just a device. The question is, with what urgency, with what totality, you make your whole mind only concerned with the koan. 24 hours. It is not something that you do 1 hour and forget about it. It is a monastery method. Remember, there are methods which are individual. You can do anywhere. And there are methods which are monastery methods. You can do only in a monastery. Where you are 24 hours allowed to meditate, where there is nothing else to do but to meditate, koan is a monastery method. If you can put all your energy, not leaving a small chunk of your consciousness beside, as is the habit of people, they never take everything for safety, for urgency. They keep something holding out. They never put all that they have into the method. I have heard Mullah Nasruddin was caught traveling without a ticket. The ticket checker was puzzled because Mullah opened all his suitcases and threw things all over the compartment. And finally the very effort of his search, he looked into every pocket except one pocket on the left side, the checker watch, and he said that your effort proves that certainly you have the ticket and it has got mixed up, you are carrying too much luggage. So don't be worried, when you get down, you can look at it. But one question I have to ask you, you have looked into everything, why don't you look in your left side pocket? He said, don't mention that. And then he said, why? When you are looking, then why you are keeping that one pocket? He said, that is my only hope, that perhaps it may be there. If it is not there, that is certain, it is nowhere. I cannot drop my hope. First, I will have to look through everything. And he was not only looking into his own suitcases, he started looking into other people. The ticket checker said, you stop. These are not your suitcases. You are a madman. You are not looking in the pocket where I think the ticket is. And you have started opening other people's suitcases. He said, I will search it first throughout the world. Only at the last resort, when everything is finished, I will check out into my left pocket. That is my only hope. People always keep something aside, never put everything in totality at the stake. And what they put aside keeps them divided. They cannot become total. They remain only a part, involved, and a part not involved. So the first thing the koan does is to make you completely straight forward, pointing to a single goal like an arrow. And if this is done, soon your mind will be tired, but if you are saving some energy, your mind will always rejuvenate. The saving energy will never allow you to be so tired and so exhausted that you simply drop the coin. You simply say, I am fed up, I am finished, this is stupid. There cannot be any sound with one hand clapping. At that exhausted moment, mind stops. Tired, utterly fed up, and the mind is stopping even for a single moment. And in the blink of the eye, you are on the other shore. for one facing the turbulence of life and death, these qualms clear away the sandy soil of worldly concerns and open up the golden treasure which was there from the beginning, the ageless root of all things. A very simple device, if done rightly, can open up the cosmic treasures, your ultimate home. However, if after grappling with a koan for 3 or 5 years, there is still no satori, no enlightenment, then the koan should be dropped. This is what I call the compassionate master. Bhukkha is very much concerned with the disciples. Not just saying the ultimate truth, but almost trailing with him by the side as a fellow traveler, making him aware of every pitfall. If for 3 or 5 years there is still no satori, then the koan should be dropped. Otherwise it may become an invisible chain round one. You will be started thinking that this is a kind of mantra, a religious ritual, every day you do it, nothing happens. But perhaps sometimes you will accumulate enough virtue. But what virtue you can accumulate by thinking on a koan like the sound of one hand clapping? These are not mantras that you go on repeating all your life. These are absolutely scientific devices, but one has to do it with totality, then they can open the door. If you do it half-heartedly, then please don't do it. Because doing it half-heartedly, you will never come to the gate. You will remain repeating your nonsense, because it is nonsense. You have to remember that it is nonsense that you are repeating. There is no sound of one hand clapping. And there is no face that you can find anywhere before your parents were born. These are not puzzles that you can with great intelligence solve. They look like puzzles, but they are not puzzles. They are simply absurdities. But the absurd is capable of tiring the mind. Only absurd can tire it. Anything rational, mind will manage. Anything reasonable, mind will manage. Anything logical, mind will manage. Only something absurd, mind cannot manage the external. It can go nuts, but it cannot solve the problem. Before it goes nuts, you have to drop the problem. Remember that either your corn can drive you nuts if you are doing it half-heartedly, or it can make you a Buddha if you are doing it totally, wholeheartedly. The whole question is of urgency and totality. Before the corn becomes a chain, a bondage, it has to be dropped. Even these traditional methods can become a medicine which poisons. In general, meditation has to be done with urgency. But if after 3 or 5 years the urgency is still maintained forcibly, the tension becomes a wrong one and it is a serious condition. It can drive you mad. Just think, for 5 years, day and night, a person is thinking about the sound of one hand clapping. He will go mad. It will become such a psychological condition that he may want to stop it, but it will not stop. It will go on and on inside in him. What is the sound of one hand clapping? Even in his sleep, it will continue. The moment he will open his eyes, the first thought will be, what is the sound of one hand clapping? Before going to sleep, the last thought will be, what is the sound of one hand clapping? And the same will continue in the whole night, like an undercurrent. Book is making it clear that remember that even medicine can become poison, can become out of date. You should not use it beyond its limits. And if you want to do it within its limits, then do it so totally that you are finished before the time limit on the medicine is finished. On every bottle of medicine there is a date, last date. Beyond that you should not use it. On every device there is a time limit. And if you want to experience the eternal in you, then don't go slowly. Then be fast before the time limit on the device is finished. And always remember that it is a nonsense device. There is no answer of it. And it is not meant to find an answer. Its purpose is there. And the purpose is to adjust your mind. To put total energy so quickly it is adjusted. The more quick you adjust the mind, sooner the realization, the transcendence, the opening of the doors of your eternal treasure. In general, meditation has to be done with urgency. But if after 3 or 5 years the urgency is still maintained, possibly the tension becomes a wrong one and it is a serious condition. Many lose heart and give up as a result. An ancient has said, sometimes quickly and sometimes slowly, sometimes heart on the trail and sometimes resting at a distance. Bhikkhu continued, so this mountain priest now makes people at this stage throw down their koan. When it is dropped and there is a cooling down, because you were going with full speed, your mind was becoming hotter and hotter, on a single point for years, Bhikkhu says, I tell to my disciples, now it is time to drop it and let the mind cool down. There is a cooling down. In due time they hit on what their own true nature is as the solution of the koan. When the mind will cool down, that is almost equivalent of mind being put aside. In the first case, it was sudden enlightenment. In the second case, it will be called gradual enlightenment. I don't use koans for the simple reason because you are not in a monastery. The method is basically monastery method. Nobody has made the distinction before. My people are in the world. They cannot put their totality 24 hours. It is enough for them to put their totality for few minutes and just have a drink of their eternity, of their immortality, just to have a glimpse of the root, and don't continue it. Just let it remain like a far away echo surrounding you, a fragrance just as when you pass a rose garden, even if you don't touch the roses, your clothes will carry the fragrance of the roses. You are in the world and I want every of my sannyasins to be in the world. I don't want you to be in a monastery. Because monastery takes of your 24 hours, destroys all your capabilities of creativity, and most often either people become so tired that they leave the monastery and enter into another monastery. This is a constant phenomenon in Japan. People getting tired with one monastery, move into another monastery, and because they don't have to work anything, food is supplied by the monastery, clothes are supplied by the monastery, their only work is to concentrate on the koan. Either they become fed up with the monastery, they think something is wrong with this koan, nothing is happening, 3 years have passed, or they go nuts. Their urgency in totality takes a wrong turn. They become mad. This happens constantly in Zen monasteries. In fact, every Zen monastery has a special retreat place for monks to go mad. But their method is very simple to bring the mad monk back into the world. Modern psychiatry and psychology should study their methods, because what they cannot do in 10 years' time is done within 3 weeks. And in fact, nothing is done, just in the monastery, a far away place in the bamboos, hidden behind by the side of a river, a small cottage, and the man is left alone there and is told not to talk to anybody. Anyway, nobody passes from there, only the man who brings the food every day. But he is not allowed to talk to the man, neither the man is allowed even to make gestures or even to say hello. 3 weeks sitting silently, nobody to talk, nothing to do, the mind cools down. What psychoanalysis cannot do in 15 years, Zen monastery has been doing for 1,000 years, for thousands of months. Nobody goes to visit for those 3 weeks. Just the man is left alone. First he talks to himself. Then slowly, slowly the heat goes away. He cools down. A beautiful scene. The flowers and the bamboos and the river and no man around. And as he cools down, he is brought back to the monastery. But in either case, one should not do a method in such a way that it drives you mad. And the reason why people get mad for certain methods is that they are trying to be clever. They keep a certain amount of energy by the side in the left pocket. So they are never total. And unless they are total, mind cannot be put aside. So totality is really the function, the purpose of a koan. I am not using it and I will not tell anybody else to use it unless he is part of a monastery where he has no mundane work to do, where he is completely dependent on the society. But when you are dependent on the society, you cannot be rebellious. That's why Zen masters have achieved Buddhahood, but their Buddhahood is not a rebellion. It is not a revolution. I want my Buddha to be rebellious, but you can be a rebel only if you don't depend on the society. If you are independent in your working, in your earning, you can be rebellious against all orthodoxies. It is very cunning, but perhaps without any intention, rich people, emperors, they all donate to the monasteries. It is very good for them. They are earning a spiritual virtue, opening a bank account in heaven. And on the other end, keeping those people never becoming rebellious. They have crippled them completely. They have forgotten to do anything. They are not asked to do anything but just sit and meditate on the koan, which is an absurdity. By chance, and I will say only by chance, someone becomes enlightened through koan. Because at least one has to keep for 2-3 years repeating it. Just constantly involved in it. Remember the difference that going out of mind is not going beyond mind. Going out of mind is very easy. Many people go mad without any koan. but perhaps they have also a certain koan of their own. Maybe it is money, maybe it is a woman or a man, and they drive themselves continuously thinking about it. I know a man who drove himself mad because of money. He was so much in love with money that it is almost impossible to believe it. If you have a 100 rupee note in your hand, it is yours, but he will touch it just to feel it. And you could see even his saliva coming out. I became friendly with the fellow. So he used to come to my place and I will give him few notes just to play with, and he will be so happy. And finally I heard that he has been forced into a madhouse because it became a difficult thing. He started stealing, he started borrowing and will never pay. So the whole city became aware and he will never purchase anything because he has to give the money. Money was his God. It is many people's God. It is their koan. It is also just like a koan, insoluble. However much you have, your desire is always for more. It is insoluble. Even the richest man in the world is not satisfied with his riches. Wants more. In concentration on a koan, there is a time of rousing the spirit of inquiry, there is a time of breaking the clinging attachments, there is a time of furious dashing forward, and there is a time of damping the fuel and stopping the boiling. Since coming to Japan, this mountain priest has been making the couples look into a koan, but when they have done this for a good time, he tells them to throw it down. The point is that many people come to success if they first have the experience of wrestling with a koan and later reduce the effort. That's why I say he is a very practical and pragmatic teacher. He is not like a Bodhidharma, a soul in one billow, your head is gone. He is more business-like. He says, because he had come from China and lived in Japan, that it helps even if you have not attained satori, enlightenment, just getting hot, not enough to evaporate, he starts telling you, cool down, drop it. His experience is that even this little heating up and then cooling down gives a certain space and gap, a comparison between two states, and through that gate, through that small acquaintance with the difference between heated mind and the cool mind, he may come to success at the time when they are putting out exceptional efforts. But this is in my understanding a very business-like approach. Perhaps somebody may have attained enlightenment in this way, but I will not say that this is a principle. It can only be an accident. I don't use koan at all because my people are to put their totality for 5 minutes and that's enough. And then just the remembrance of it will transform their life. And just for few minutes going inward has never driven anyone mad. You can go as deep as possible with your totality, because you know Nivedana is sitting there. He won't allow you to go beyond the limit. Just as you are coming close to the limit where you can lose your mind, Nirvana's drum immediately calls you back. We are not to lose the mind. We have to go beyond the mind and use the mind from being beyond. Mind is a good mechanism. We are not against the mind. We simply don't want mind to be the dominant, the master. We want our consciousness to be the master and mind only a functionary, a servant. Bhukku says, so the instruction is that those who have not yet looked into a koan absolutely must do so. But those who have had one for a good time must throw it down. At the time of Zazen, they throw it all away. They sleep when it is time to sleep, go when it is time to go, sit when it is time to sit, and so on, as if they were not doing Zen at all. This part in itself is beautiful. This part can be of immense help to you. While you are doing your meditations, do totally forget the whole world. As if for those few minutes there is no world, only you, and this space that you are running with the speed of light, like an arrow, to hit some unknown center of your being. And just gather the experience, the joy, the blissfulness, and come back. Come back with your Buddhahood as a fragrance around you, and then watch in your day-to-day life, working all kinds of things, just by the corner of the eye, remember that you may be chopping wood or carrying water from the well. You are a Buddha. Although nobody has seen Gautam Buddha chopping wood and carrying water from the well, so many disciples loved him that they managed to chop the wood for him and carry the water from the well. But before you gather few Buddhas around you, you have to chop the wood, and you have to carry the water. But don't forget that you are a Buddha. It is a good opportunity before other Buddhas start chopping your wood. This last statement is beautiful. Be a Buddha, but don't be an exhibitionist. Don't try to convince others that you are a Buddha. That's what mad people do. It is enough that you know you are a Buddha. You don't have to convince the neighbor. That you are really a Buddha. I used to go to mad houses. In one of the states, one of my friends was the governor. So he allowed me, I could visit any madhouse in the state or any jail, wherever I wanted to go. It is very difficult to see the mad people. you cannot change their opinion, whatever opinion they have. If they think that they are a railway train, they will go by our side making the noise of the train. Just they will not bother you are standing there. Anywhere they are going, they are a train. And you cannot convince. I asked a madman who was just going I said, do you have any passengers? He said, I am just an engine and I am something, I am not going anywhere. Just something from this room to that room. And I am only an engine, I don't care about passengers. And he was so serious. I said, it will be good to connect a train with you. He said, I don't like the idea. Why should I bother with any passengers and trains? I'm enjoying myself perfectly. And he went on. The superintendent said that we have tried, it does not work, nothing works. You cannot change the mind of a madman. And I am making this statement for a particular reason. Don't have such a mind which cannot be changed. That's what fundamentalists have. Fundamentalist Christians like Ronald Reagan. You cannot change their mind. And that is a sign of madness. An intelligent man is always available to change. If a better argument is given to him. You cannot change the fundamentalist. He has decided and decided for eternity. There is no way to convince even Jesus that you are not the Son of God. Thousands of people have tried it, but listen. Don't make unnecessary fuss. And you look like a clown sitting on a donkey, followed by a few idiots. And claiming that you are the only begotten Son of God. You are a humiliation to other religions. The Jews were trying hard to convince that just you are a carpenter, remember. Your father is Joseph and your mother is Mary, remember. But a fundamentalist In a crowd, he was speaking, and somebody said that your mother is standing outside. And it hurt what he said. He said, tell that woman that I don't have any relatives here. My father is in the heaven. No, telling to that poor woman, she has not seen him for years, because for years he has been wandering in Kashmir, in Ladakh, in Tibet. In the Bible there is no account about 17 years of his life, and he lived only 33 years. Only 3 years, last 3 years are depicted. What happened to 17 years before it? Because one mention when he was 13 is there, and after that there is a big gap. The mother has not seen him for so long. Naturally, the poor old woman, and he insulted. He did not give her an appointment. He is no ordinary man. These relatives drag him down to humanity. He is a son of God. He is divine, he is not human. You cannot change the mind of a fundamentalist. And to me, the fundamentalist is equivalent to mad. A reasonable man, an intelligent man, is never fundamentalist. He is always ready and available to change anything if he can find a better argument, a better idea, a better solution. He is flexible. He is not adamant and stubborn. He is ready to bend, to change, to transform. I want you never to be a fundamentalist. Always remain vulnerable. To be vulnerable to existence is the most beautiful experience, but for that you need some acquaintance with existence. From your inner being, not from your outside. You know the stars from the outside, but you have not known the universe from your inside. From your very roots, you have to come to a contact, and that contact will be your liberation. That contact will make you a Buddha. You are a Buddha. Just a little dust has gathered on the mirror. I am reminded of Michelangelo. He passed from the market where marble shafts were. And he was a sculptor, perhaps the best the world has known. He saw before a shop on the other side of the road a big marble rock. He asked how much it will cost. The owner said it will not cost anything because for 10 years it has been lying there and I have not found anybody to be interested in it. If you want, you can take it. At least I need more space for other rock. That rock is taking too much space. And I don't think anybody can make anything out of it. It is a strange rock. The shape is strange. So Michelangelo took that rock and after 2 years working on the rock, he created the world's most famous statue of Jesus had been just brought down from the cross and Mary, his mother, is holding him in her lap. The cross and Jesus and the mother and full life size. And Michelangelo was certainly one of the greatest men as far as his culture is concerned. You can see Jesus as if he is just going to come back to life. So alive. You can see every muscle of the man. You can see the holes in his hands which the nails have made. Just 2 years before, a madman destroyed that statue. Nobody has ever thought that anybody would destroy such a beautiful statue in the Vatican. And before the court, the madman said that I had to destroy it because I want to be as famous as Michelangelo. Now my name will always be remembered with Michelangelo. He made it, I destroyed it. But when the statue was ready, Michelangelo invited the shop owner to see what has happened to the rock. He could not believe his eyes. He said, "You have done a miracle. How you manage?" He said, "No, I have not managed anything. Just as I was passing by the road, I heard the rock saying that hidden in me is Jesus and Mary. Just you have to take few chunks here and there and Jesus and Mary will reveal themselves. I have not created Jesus or Mary. I have simply removed unnecessary marble left only the necessary that makes Jesus and Mary in the cross. This is really the experience of a meditator. As you go deeper, you hear not in words, but something more magnificent towards a Buddha which is hidden inside you, at the very soul. And once you have touched those roots, once you have known your Buddhahood, just for 5 minutes, it is enough to remember it 24 hours, and slowly, slowly it will change your whole life in a beauty, in a grace, in a tremendous ecstasy. You don't have to do meditation 24 hours. I am against monasteries and monks because they are absolutely unnecessary load on the society. And particularly in the East, where poverty is so much, these monks are heavy on the whole economy. Just in Thailand, 2 years before, they had to pass a law in the parliament that nobody can become a monk without getting a license from the government. Because out of 4, 1 person was a monk. The other 3 had to supply everything to the monk. It was tradition that every family should give 1 son, particularly the eldest son, to the religion, to the church. They were 1/4 of the population. The whole population is poor, and these 1/4 vagabonds, thinking that they are doing something spiritual, are just being parasites. I don't want anybody to be a monk. I want it to be in the world. Meditation need not to be done 24 hours. Meditation is just a small glimpse, and then carry out your work slowly, slowly that glimpse will start radiating in your actions, in your silences, in your songs, in your dances. There is no need to waste 24 hours and become a parasite. And when you become a parasite on the society, you cannot rebel against the society. You cannot say a single thing against any superstition. My people can be sannyasins and yet absolutely rebellious because they are not dependent on anyone. Their meditation is their own personal affair. Why all the religions are against me? because I am introducing a new kind of sannyasin in the world. And the fear is that if this fire catches hold like a wild fire, then sannyasins will be the most rebellious people in the world. They will destroy all superstitions and all stupidities, and they will not agree to anything that goes against their consciousness. This is the danger. That 21 countries have decided in their parliament that I am a dangerous man. And strangely enough, not a single man in those parliaments have asked, what do you mean by dangerous? Everybody understood, it seems, that the danger is giving individuality to religion, is giving rebelliousness to the individual, and no vested interest wants it. They are ready for monks, they are ready for monasteries to give donations, but they are really afraid of people who are Buddhas and rebellious at the same time. Because to me, a Buddha and not rebellious is not much of a Buddha. He is just a rotten piece. A poet wrote, in the evening, if it were rain, we should seek shelter, but thinking it is only mist, we go on and become drenched. He is not talking about the rain outside. He is talking about your inside. Don't be afraid. Get drenched in the mist, in the mystery. And when you come back a totally different person. One that has gone in should be left, and you should take a new face, your original face, dropping the mask and bringing your original face is the whole alchemy of meditation. An old man, for the first time, had come to a big city, and he was standing amazed, looking at high skyscraper, and then he saw an old woman, very old woman, entering into a cabin. He could not understand that it is an elevator. But he watched what happens. And when the elevator came down, a young woman came out. He said, "My God, if I had known, I would have brought my old woman with me." This is great fun. But exactly this happens. When you go in, you are an old mask. When you come back as a fresh original face. This everyday experience is slowly will become your 24-hour silent experience. There is no need to say to anybody that you are a Buddha. They will understand themselves. You cannot hide a fire. You cannot hide a Buddha either. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, this unspeakable that you are trying to communicate to us, this ungraspable that we are trying to get, sometimes it seems profoundly mysterious, sometimes it seems embarrassingly obvious. Is it either of these or both together?" Manisha, it is both together. From one standpoint, it is obvious. Those who know, it is obvious. Those who don't know, it is very mysterious. But it is the same thing. Our effort is to move from the point of obviousness to the point of mysteriousness. Turning your simplicity into innocence. Bringing your childhood fragrance and freshness. Buddha is not a foreigner. Buddha is your innermost core where nobody has been able to reach, otherwise they would have changed its face. It is the place where only you can go. That's why it has remained original, otherwise society would have colored it, managed it in such a way that it becomes useful and purposeful for the society, but nobody can reach within you except you. And certainly when you know your mysterious existence, you don't want to be anyone else. You have come to the point where the whole cosmos welcomes you to home. Now the clouds have come. As long as you are going to laugh, the clouds are going to come to listen. They come at the right moment. Jogashti staggers home late one night after drinking about 1,000 beers. When he comes into the bedroom, he discovers his wife laying half naked on the bed and a strange man in the act of removing his pants. "For the last time, lady," says the man, thinking furiously, "if you don't pay your gas bill right now, I will sit on the floor." Max Muldoon gets drafted to fight in Ronald Reagan's new war in the Middle East, and he does not like the idea at all. He does everything he can do to avoid being in the army, but somehow finds himself in General Grimgut's Marine Platoon. One day Max is in the front line of battle. The noise is terrifying as bullets and bombs fly all around him. Max looks up in horror and then throws down his gun. "I have had enough," he shouts, and he starts running away from the front line. Many people try to stop him as he runs, but Max pays no attention to them. He runs and runs until he bumps right into General Grimgut himself. "Stop!" roars Grimgut. "What for?" shouts back Max. "I am ordering you to stop," shouts the General. "I am your commanding officer." "My God," replies Max, quite surprised. "Am I dead for that already?" Sixteen-year-old Sally tiptoes into the confession box in the Holy Martyrs Virgin's Church, where Father Fumble is sitting. "Father," whispers Shelley, "I have sinned." "Tell me all about it," replies the young priest. "Well, Father," continues Shelley, "my boyfriend Billy came home with me the other day and I took him to my room." "Really?" says Father Fumble. "And what happened in there?" "Well, Father," continues Sally, "Willie pushed me back onto the bed and started taking my clothes off." "Really?" says Father Fumble. "And what happened next?" "Then Billy took off his clothes and jumped on top of me," sobs Sally. "Ahem. Tough," somebody clearing his throat and tell me, my child, did you feel his organ coming between your legs? I am not a musician. This life said it. But I would say it felt more like a flu. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be frozen. Look inward with your totality straight ahead. Just a little more. And you will be encountering your real self. It is raining outside, but inside it is only mist. Get drenched into it. Drop your mask, and when you come back with your original face. Your original face is the Buddha. To get hold of it totally, Nivedana, relax. Just wash the body and the mind. And remember, you are neither. You are the watcher. This already beautiful evening becomes more ecstatic by your watching. just watching, you will feel utter emptiness. And the emptiness is the name of Buddha himself. This silence you have all become one in an oceanic consciousness. Boundaries are lost. Limits are forgotten. Collect this experience because you have to carry it out 24 hours in all your actions and gestures, words and silences. Nivedana, come back, but come back with your original face, silent, peaceful, graceful, a Buddha. Sit like a Buddha for 2 seconds and remember it 24 hours. It is not an achievement, it is just a remembrance of your forgotten self. It is obvious, but it is mysterious also. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, okay.
Can we celebrate the gathering of the 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes, okay.